Welcome to Lady BizWiz, where we help you focus, execute, and get results as you take your business from concept to market. Today, you'll hear the first installment of a talk with Emra Smith, founder and CEO of the International School of Story and owner of Abode Studios in Savannah, Georgia. Emra is a passionate advocate for impacting communities with hope through the power of story. In this conversation, she explains how your deepest purpose and your business can align to bring meaningful change in your communities. It's a fascinating discussion and one that is so important as we face so many challenges post-pandemic. Let's listen in now to the first part of The Social Impact Entrepreneur. Well, good morning. There is a saying that says, if you want to find out what you're supposed to do in life, you find the place where your gift and the world's greatest need meet. And I'm here today with someone special who I think has absolutely done that in her life. Her name is Emra Smith. Welcome to the podcast, Emra.
Thanks for having me.
So Emra's here today to talk about blending this idea of mission and purpose and community service. Social impact is what you call it, right?
Yes.
With business. She's a social impact entrepreneur, which I love. I've never heard that term until this morning, and I love it. A lot of people go into business because, obviously we want to make a profit. We want to improve the quality of our lives, but a lot of people also go into business because there's something that maybe they lacked and they want to fill a need. They have a gift and they want to fill a need that's currently not being met. Would you agree with that?
Yes, and I think when you think of having a business, you think of freedom of time and being your own boss, and it makes me giggle because you do have freedom of time to move around as you want, but you really work all the time. It's kind of nonstop.
It's kind of like being a mom, right? You can't ever get away from that job. When you have young kids, it's like 24/7, right?
It's true. And I really believe in that saying that you said. And we all know that, you know, we hear it so often. It's not work when you're doing what you love. It makes me giggle too because, is work.
It is work.
Everything that is worthwhile and you have an amazing outcome is work. And I love to move away from that going, don't have such a negative context about work. Work is good. I feel we are born to work, to be productive, to do something for outcome. And so when you shift that way of framing work and you do find something that you are passionate about, the difference I feel is that doing the work and what it takes, you can do it. You get to thrive in it. It's not a burden. It's hard sometimes, but you can push through the hard.
That's so good. I remember my kids took Taekwondo for a while, and the owner of the studio and his wife worked at it together, and they were there all the time. And one time we were having a conversation offline, and you know, I was like, you know, we're talking about how many hours of the day, you know, they were there. And I said, when do you have time to do life? He said, this is life. And it's just always stuck with me that, you know, when you're doing what you're passionate about, that is life. It is a gift, really, to be able to do something and have an impact.
And I feel we all have that choice. And of course, the journey to get there is exactly that. It doesn't necessarily happen overnight. For some, it does. But I think to actually hone it and for it to become, if you are a visionary and you have a long-term vision and outcome that you're looking at, that journey can meander all over the place. But it's what I believe passionately, that each of your little stories ends up making your big story and creates this place when you as you journey, you have all these different things maybe that you touch on in life that makes you who you are. It unpacks your gifts, it enhances your skills, it broadens your width in a sense. You can get a bigger picture, and then you take all of that and it becomes part of this thing that you have always longed for.
And nothing is wasted.
I love that. Nothing is wasted. And but it does take courage. It does take strength. It takes clarity. And a whole lot of stuff is needed to get to that.
Well, that's such a great introduction. And you mentioned the word story, which I know has been such a big word for you in your life. Emra is the founder and CEO of the International School of Story. Tell us a little bit about your journey to starting that nonprofit.
It is really a lifelong journey when you only see it when you really look back and you put all the threads together. And my mom was a storyteller and writer on the radio in South Africa, where I am from. I didn't know that that would have any impact on my life. It's not like she read her stories to me. I do have an odd name because she named all the creatures in her stories these crazy names. So as one of her only creature, real, live, two-legged one. And so that was woven into my life. And I've always had a passion to be a missionary. I've always had a passion to make a difference. It has always been part of who I am. And one night, some 7 years ago now, I was watching the stories of the woman that were coming over, fleeing in their little boats, babies washed overboard, the trials and the horrible things the woman went through as they fled their homeland. And my heart started breaking and I wanted to go and help. I'm an action person. I like to go and do, but I couldn't. And I just started thinking that night of the woman in our city. And then I thought of those in our state, in our country, and my heart just, it broke into pieces and I mourned and I'm like, God, what can one woman do? Mm-hmm. And I woke up the next morning. Now I understand how what you go to bed when you're in a deep place of emotion, how it impacts the different waves within you. And I feel in one of those is where God dwells, alpha, beta, delta, all those sleep places. And something works within you. And so I woke up that morning and I had this marvelous idea of them, drew this little doll, cut her out, stitched her by hand, didn't have a sewing machine, and put a little tea bag, a note of hope inside, knowing that this, I can send these wherever I go and send messages of hope in this little hope doll. And 2 days later, I looked at it and I said, that's the dumbest thing I've ever done. 2 days later, as I looked at the posts of what was happening with these women and children, the physician said their hearts broke and all they could do was go to a little store, get some soft toys and give it to the woman and children, and they were overcome with the response and how they clung to these. Mm. I just fell on my knees and I said, I'm sorry. Mm. I will make a fool of myself till the day I die and take this little dolls with me wherever I go and share hope. So this message of hope on the card inside can duplicate when we are not present. So I put them in a backpack and went downtown Savannah, had them with me, and from that was born the 21-day hope walk, and walking with these little dolls and doing speaking engagements and projects and working in shelters and rehabs and always just doing things. So we've had some amazing, we're working on our 7th one for this year in October, worked 6 to 10 miles a day for 21 days. And honestly, yeah, one of my hope walks, I think it was the second, it is a huge, crazy story. And I was have I done the right thing? I San Francisco to LA. What is this all about? The whole to do. And once again, pouring my heart out in questioning and knowing the outcome that needs to happen and the purpose. But I think in the journey, we all get to second guess at some point when it doesn't work out right. And many steps in this were like, what is happening here? And I remember the beach I was walking on wasn't really a beach, but these cliffs in California, the ocean reminded me of Cape Town in South Africa. And in that place again was born this Emra, you need to start the International School of Story. And so 5 years now, we incorporated and this journey began, and many of the programs we do and really sharing hope through helping predominantly women and some like-minded men how to cope with stress, anxiety, and depression. And just thriving in life, in spite of life. We do it through so many different ways now. 5 years later, we have many ways and avenues that we do that. And then within that, the longing and the dream for us to have our own place where we can actually have Hope Doll Stitchers come and they can stitch together there in community. We can do our programs of, you know, reclaiming your identity and the things that we do and teach how to write your story and what is your story and that you have a story to make an impact in the world. And we wanted this place so desperately.
Well, can we just go back? I know that's a beautiful story. And it sounds like, so it was birthed out of seeing these women fleeing their country and having nothing, losing everything. And you really empathizing with their pain and wanting to reach out with this message that there's hope. I know from personal experience that that kind of compassion, empathy only comes through suffering personally. I don't think we're born necessarily, maybe we're born with an empathetic bent, but I think it's the things that we go through in life that often make us sensitive to the sufferings of others, which is what I hear you saying. You long to bring hope and healing and to help other women tell their story. What in your life, I guess, where in your life have you felt silenced or felt trapped so that you were able to develop this incredible compassion for other women?
It started unconsciously, obviously, as a child, when my mother left me as a newborn with my dad, and then 3 years later came and scooped me up to her new marriage. I have no recollection of my childhood under six, so I know those were painful years. I didn't have a mother, then felt abandoned by my father in a strange new circumstance and had to make life work from there. I was always the outsider, the Afrikaans child in an English community. Then when my stepdad was dying at the age of 9, my mother prayed. She was agnostic. God, if you heal this man from this day forward, I will search for you with all my heart. And instantly he was healed. He was about to die. He had a brain tumor. He was unconscious already. And then the long journey of his recovery. And at that time, she found this church. And without me knowing, we became, at 9, I get introduced to God and we became Seventh-day Adventists. And she did literally search and she tried everything. So in high school, we kept Jewish holidays. And so there's always this odd kid that was a vegetarian and didn't come to school today because it was the Day of Tabernacles or worshipped on Saturdays. No sport games for me. And I got to be a listener and one that was there for others and sort of the outsider, quiet. And then I got married. I started studying psychology, of course, the passion of my heart to be there for others. And I remember I got married young, left college to go and help build a business. And it was very much a his world, not an our world. And I remember saying to God during those young years, in my 20s, I have empathy for others because I understand feeling this way, but I don't feel like I've really had trauma. I can't really feel. I think I know, but I don't feel it. And when our second daughter was born and it was clear something was amiss, but we went through this journey and many stories in that, but when she was six, found out that she wasn't just physically challenged, she was mentally challenged. And I remember walking out of that doctor's office as if I stepped into a big black vacuum. And wasn't allowed to speak about it. We both in our family dealt with stress differently. I had no resource. There weren't people around me with challenged kids. And I lived this isolated world of being blamed for not being a good parent to this little girl, doing the right things. And I went with my gut. So a lot of stories in all of that. And I remember when I eventually, and she fed every 2 hours, night and day. You walk around exhausted all the time and had a 3.5-year-old. And I remember at some point, I'm like, you never asked why me. And I remember clearly, it is as if this thought dwelled with a quietude over me. Remember when you asked me that you could feel what others went through. And I'm like, yeah, I can feel it now. And so I never asked why. And so, and then of course, life meandered on, and we eventually moved to the United States, and I decultured, and I became a good American independent woman. And it didn't work well in my family. And after 25 years of marriage, I chose to step out, which went against the core of my being, which is a servant heart.
And I'm
Christian
assuming
values.
Your family also is very high on the value.
Yes, it was just foreign to my deep self that had always been. And I went for counseling for 9 months. And I remember the first while she said to me, Imre, you need to look in the mirror every day and say to yourself, I love you. And now I'm like, I can't believe this, but I could not do that. And so I had to learn this conflict in my soul about being a servant heart, my culture, my Christian upbringing, that I have to have value. And that if I don't take care of me, look, it all falls apart because you burn out at some point. And so in all of that, I started getting clarity. I learned, I had mentors, I had coaches and counselors, became a life coach, had an incredible mentor coach who journeyed me through that at that period. And so, yes, where I could only speak from pain at some point, I could then start teaching, writing, and serving as a healed person with clarity and strength, and able to really walk along someone with healthy boundaries. Because as a giver, I think it's very easy to have unhealthy boundaries. And that's why you burn out. You don't know when to set them.
Right. And that's been kind of on my mind a lot lately, too, just the idea of boundaries. And I've been watching myself in third person, like, oh, how are you going to handle this one? And I feel like I've been tested over and over in different ways. Okay, am I going to say no here? And, you know, my husband's like, you need to say no. He has no problems with boundaries, but it is tough. It's tough. It can be tough when you're a giver. It can be tough when, like for me, I grew up as a middle child, and I just became the pleaser. I became kind of the golden child that was the good one. And so you kind of learn that, well, if I'm just quiet and if I make good grades and if I don't rock the boat, that I'll be safe. Because I think a lot of what we do is to secure safety for ourselves. You know, even all the pleasing and the
And it's very unconscious.
It is very
unconscious. You don't realize it. And that's why we can be trapped in it if we not become aware of it and grow and learn and expand who we are.
Well, and life has a way of teaching us those hard lessons. Like you said, burnout is real, you know, and it definitely happened to me several times. And I've had to learn to manage my energy and my time and manage my rest as well. You have to manage your own rest and make sure that you're actually recuperating. Okay, so you got to this point where you had this nonprofit now, and it's kind of grown from just the Hope Dolls and kind of giving hope. You've started coaching. You're a coach, and you've done some executive coaching too, right? With your career.
Yes, I've been coaching probably for 14 years. Yes, and as a corporate trainer. Yep, I do that.
So did you start out just getting your certificate and then kind of marketing yourself to businesses, or how did your coaching business grow?
Yes. So before the School of Story and the experience we just shared, I was a corporate trainer in the hospitality industry. And then I became a coach, and I started getting coaching clients, and people knew me. So it was very hard to transition from a free coaching to an actual money-making coaching practice. I found that, and for me being a giver, it was a huge challenge. And I think that's why the thought of having a nonprofit was so exciting to me, because it's all about making a difference, not really knowing that it is a business. You need to make money or you won't survive. It won't grow. You'll hit a ceiling at some point. So that was not my expertise at all. And I think the just about how to be a coach in the executive world, because I was a corporate trainer And I could see very clearly when there were weaknesses. It was part of my job. I started my own business as that, and the hotel companies that I got me to do their training, I then said, no, I'm going to survey your leaders. Where are all your managers, your exec team? Can I do this? I became a DISC certified person. And so I started working with the leadership teams because I realized no matter how hard and how well I train your staff, if your leaders haven't bought into this, I am wasting my time. And I really don't want my company name to be associated with your what's going on down here. Mm. It's a bad reflection on what I'm training because I get buy-in from the staff immediately. So that's how that developed for me, working with the executives and the executive teams. And I could tell if the general manager, the leader, was not going to bring about decent change, I would have to remove myself from that company. So that became a natural experience for me. But always I had this war about just doing this business, which is using my gifts and skills. That those were my excellent places, teaching, leading, psychology is enwrapped in all of that, and making a difference. I ended up feeling I make a difference here and I make a difference to the people, but I was called to something more than that, or should I say different to that, to make an impact in my community. So when we moved here to this area here in the Low Country 11 years ago, of course, as you heard, 7 years Hope Walk, 5 years nonprofit, this all started flowing together. I started writing my books. I have 5 books now. And then, yep, the whole next level has to come.
Thank you for joining us today on Lady BizWiz. Tune in next week as we continue this conversation with Emra Smith on becoming a social impact entrepreneur. We hope you have a great day. We'll see you next time.